Corn, soybeans, and wheat all closed higher. Even live cattle and feeders found a way to end the day on the plus side of unchanged. Cotton mixed, so were lean hogs. But once again, the grain markets prove that traders are willing to carry long positions into the weekend out of the fear of missing a Monday morning rally.
Live with more May market mayhem via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we look back on the weird week that was with Rick Brock of Brock & Associates. We'll get the news from Tyne Morgan. I'm producer Big Apple Joe Stackler. And now, the host of AgriTalk. Let's see if he can make sense of it all. No pressure. Chip Flory.
All right, Joe. Thank you so much. Hey, Davis would have been proud of the May market mayhem right there.
Oh, because of the alliteration, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then he loves that kind of stuff.
The weird week that was.
Yes. Yeah, it's all good, man. Good work. Good work. That's it. That's it. You can take a break from doing the opens now, okay?
Yes, thank you very much.
All right. Good work this week, Joe. Hey, we've got a lot of ground to cover. The moves that these markets made this week and the moves that we saw from today's lows are very impressive, and we're going to be leaning on Rick Brock to get some perspective on what it all means and to look forward to next week's USDA reports, what we need to be doing for risk management strategies. We've got a lot of ground to cover with Rick coming up here in a little bit. But first, let's get to Tyne Morgan. Tyne, how are you?
Oh, my gosh, what a week. And I know all of your listeners are thinking the exact same thing, and the week isn't over. My goodness, Chip. What a ride it has been this week. And just when you think, this is over. No, it's not.
Right. You know, and another thing that made it a very interesting week was the weather, because there were so many chances that we had like three chances this week that we might have been knocked out of the field. The farmers might have been knocked out of the field, that we could have gotten some moisture in the really dry areas, and we've been missing it, Tyne. Mm-hmm. Now, Saturday night into Sunday morning, looks like we've got a pretty good chance for rain.
Yep.
We'll see. If it doesn't happen, Tyne, look out on Monday.
I mean, around here, I told you, Chip, like, we've had decent moisture. And so, you know, but this week we had a couple chances of rain. Those rains never came. And so, you know, a lot of these farmers have been in the fields since this weekend and making major headway. And so I think a couple of them were glad to miss the rain just to get it planted. But anytime you miss a rain, it definitely puts a pit in your stomach and you know, even areas that are wet. But, you know, hearing from those farmers in, you know, South Dakota and some of those areas that are just waiting to plant, waiting on moisture, I hope they get that moisture this weekend, and I hope that means they get to plant next week.
That's right. Okay, let's break it down what happened in the markets here today.
Well, there is a lot, Chip, but the potential for scattered showers in the U.S. Northern Plains and the Canadian prairies had wheat prices lower earlier in the session, but a return of buying in corn and soybeans, that pulled wheat to the upside after midday. Traders are also taking note of increased interest for wheat in the domestic feed market, upping the odds that wheat carryover could be dragged lower in upcoming supply and demand reports that we're watching. July soft red winter wheat futures on Monday closed near the low of the week and finished today near the week's high and about 50 cents above Monday's low. So July hard red winter wheat, that was a dime higher at 736 and three quarters. July soft red winter wheat jumped 8.5 cents to end the week at 761 and three quarters. And Chip, September spring wheat, that was 7.5 cents higher at 802 and a half.
Yeah. A couple of other things happening in this wheat market that we can't lose track of. And we got to watch what's happening with European wheat trade and the movement of wheat out of the Black Sea. The tender or the trade activity for food grade wheat this week, Tyne, I felt like it didn't fall off a cliff, but it was hard to find it. But there was very much increased interest in feed quality wheat around the world. So feed makers everywhere are looking for an alternative for corn right now, and they're looking to wheat. On the week, July SRW wheat was up 27 cents. July HRW wheat up 33¼ cents, and September spring wheat up 34 cents on the week. So big moves in the wheat market.
Well, Chip, some are arguing that this weather market, well, it's already started. That's as persistently dry conditions in Brazil's Safrinha corn areas were the big driver in this week's sharp rally in corn prices. Cuts to Brazil's crop triggered sales of U.S. corn this week to Mexico, unknown destinations. And this morning, USDA making the announcement of a sale of 1.36 million metric tons to China. That's for delivery in the new crop marketing year. First large sale like that that we've seen since January, Chip. And December corn futures on Monday closed slightly lower and near the low of the week. Today, though, new crop futures closed higher for a fourth consecutive session and about 75 cents above this week's low. 75 cents, Chip.
Yeah.
July corn futures were 13.5 cents higher at 732¼. September corn, that jumped 9¼ cents to 654¾. And then Dece corn, that closed at 636½. That was up 11 cents just on the day.
Yeah. That's the reason that I've been talking about and just fascinated by the dynamics of this corn market, of this bean market this week. 75 cents off the lows in Dece corn is just absolutely stunning or shocking or whatever you want to call it. But it's the kind of thing that the specs fear missing out on. That's why they probably came back in and were buyers here late in the session. July corn on the week up 59 cents. Dece corn on the week up 72¾ cents.
And you have those expanded limits too, right? So the volatility that we're seeing now, that can get worse.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, worse or better, whichever side of the market you're on. All right. Yeah. Inflationary pressure, a fear of missing the next push to the upside, and super hot veg oil prices around the globe that all work to push the soy complex higher this week. And with very tight global oilseed supplies, a lack of selling made up the path of least resistance. Now, traders are also preparing for Wednesday's supply and demand report that Chip mentioned. That will provide USDA's first official look at the new crop balance sheets. Now, most expect the report to serve as a reminder the corn and soybean supplies will remain tight deep into the year ahead. November bean futures on Monday were near the week's lows and ended today nearly 90 cents above the week's low. July bean futures were 20¼ cents higher at 15.89¾. August beans 21¾ cents higher at 15.37½. And November bean futures that closed up 24.5 cents on the day at 14.33¾.
And on the week, July soybeans up 55½ cents, November beans up 93¾ cents, Tyne.
Well, cotton futures this week, those were dragged higher by the rallies in corn and soybeans. July cotton was 92 points lower at 89.66. In December, cotton firmed at 17 points to 86.89. Now, Monday's downside reversal in June live cattle crushed attitudes in that market, but a three-day price recovery really has the market back to the midpoint of the late April trading range. June live cattle were 55 cents higher at 116.02½ today. October cattle, that slipped 2½ cents to 123.45. August feeders closed well off session highs, but we're still 87½ cents higher at 144.27½. And June lean hog futures, that left an upside gap on the weekly chart and ended near the near point of this week's trading range, Chip.
Yep. Yeah, with, let's see, that July contract, the June hogs today, down $1.62½. On the week, we had June live cattle down 55 cents, August feeder cattle down 247½, and June lean hogs up $3.12½. Thanks, Tyne. Each year, there are billions of bushels of corn out there just waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues like climate change. Demand fluctuates. Exports are unreliable. So how do we use all that corn right here at home to change the world? POET is working hard to ensure reliable domestic demand for ever-increasing corn yields. Not only is the need for clean bioproducts made from your crops continuing to increase, nationwide adoption of E15 is also on the horizon. This would increase the amount of bioethanol in the nation's fuel supply from 10 to 15%, resulting in a market of almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year. That's 2 billion really good reasons to support biofuels. It's time for farmers and policymakers to unify around E15. Bioethanol is the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture can change the world. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us on this Friday afternoon. We're wrapping up a very dynamic week in the grain markets, oilseed markets. You can throw the livestock markets into it as well. There was some volatility that got into the livestock markets. And look what happened in the equities this week. And it's happening again. We've got, I believe we're trading to new highs in the Dow. Just fascinating moves that we are seeing in the markets in general. All right, Rick Brock, the Brock Report, Brock and Associates joins us. Rick, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm doing good. These are pretty exciting times, aren't they, for everybody?
It's just astonishing the kind of moves that we are seeing in such short periods of time, Rick. That's the thing that just blows me away when we talk about
the point of it's actually scary. Some of the moves that we're seeing. You know, lumber's been limit up 7 days in a row with expanded limits. It's up. Lumber has more than tripled in value in the last 10 months. Copper, which is used in major industries, has gone from $3 to $4.70. You know, we think the grains and livestock have moved a lot, but compared to industrial commodities, it's a pimple on an elephant's back. I mean, we're just seeing massive inflation across the board. Some of it is a result of the planned spending by the administration, but a lot of it is just pent-up demand from the world coming out of shelter from being shut down all of last year.
Yeah. Are those industrial commodities telling us something about what's going to take place in the ags?
Well, actually, I don't think so. There really isn't much correlation between, you know, price of copper and price of corn. And, you know, we're producing another crop every year. Now a South America major producer, but basically we're producing two crops a year, one there and one here. So they're very, very different markets. But I think psychologically it still has an impact. And people are saying, look, cash isn't worth much. You know, I want to buy something, and you know, it's driving everything is crazy. Housing prices, and of course, you know what all of us are interested in, the price of grain. I mean, who would have thought a year ago we'd be where we are right now in corn and beans? I mean, I certainly didn't. I don't think anyone else did as well.
And you know, Rick, a year ago, right now, you were one of the most bullish guys that I knew in soybeans.
Yeah, we didn't stay with it long enough, but we were bullish. And, you know, I'm like a lot of other people, and I'm making excuses. But, you know, the reason we're having the big bull market right now is the majority of farmers, advisors, and everybody sold last year's crop too early. I mean, it looked good at the time, but with 2020 hindsight, obviously we should have stayed on. So right now we're sitting in a situation where there aren't hardly any soybeans to be bought anywhere, off farms or out of commercial. I'm sure you saw and probably reported the fact that shipments of beans started coming into the East Coast from Brazil this week. And so when you take a look at what's happening, I think one of the key questions here, are we rationing supplies yet? And I think there are some signs that is starting to happen. First of all, and I noticed when you were given the weekly closes on corn and beans, if you notice, the markets were all bear spread this week. Yeah, they were up a lot, but the old crop spread versus the new crop spread is starting to come in. We haven't seen that for quite some time. The other thing we're seeing is cattle feedlots in the West and Southwest have now started fairly aggressively feeding wheat. Now, July Kansas City wheat at one time this week got into even money with July corn. That has happened before, but it's very infrequent. With the higher protein value in the wheat, you know, we're going to see some switching. So I think we are starting to see some of the prices playing a little bit of a role and cutting a little bit of the demand. I think Wednesday's crop report, we're not going to get the big pieces of information because they're not going to change acreage from their planting intentions report, and they're going to change yield from a trend line yield either. We don't get any of that until June. You know, we might see some adjustments in exports in corn and beans, but we already know in beans we're tight. We're, you know, don't have enough to get through the year. So I don't anticipate a lot of guidance coming from that. But you know, I think the weather is now extremely important. I mean, we're in a weather market already. And I'm sure some of the old timers listening to your radio program can remember the old saying, plant and dust, your bins will bust. And I remember that saying when I was growing up. And of course, the logic behind it is if you plant into dry fields, the plant's going to root deeper. And so then when a rain comes, you actually end up with record yields. I mean, that's what's happening right now. And you take a look at, and everybody's all excited and talking about these subsoil moisture levels, and particularly if you're in North and South Dakota, I mean, it's dire straits. You're talking, you know, like South Dakota, 70% of the state is reporting short to very short, 81% in North Dakota, and even Iowa's 58%.
Yes.
Now, throw on top of that, though.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, how much buying have the dry conditions brought into the market, or is it just limiting selling?
I think it's just limiting selling, but I think the buying that's coming into the market right now is, and whenever you have a major market, you got to say, okay, who is this hurting? Who is in trouble? And where are the margin calls coming from? And I'm, you know, the rumors are flying all over the country right now that some buyers of grain are in margin issues because of the multiplier contracts.
Yep.
You know, this is unfortunately, I think, hurt quite a few producers this year as well. And, you know, a lot of the multiplier contracts, you know, let's say they were based off of July corn back over a year ago, you know, what a very popular contract was putting a floor in July delivery corn at 350 with a ceiling of 420. And that looked good at the time, and for the last 6 years, that's worked. Well, what happens then when the market goes through 420, let's say a farmer put 100,000 bushels into that program, instead of being sold 100,000 bushels at 420, he now has 200,000 bushels sold at 420.
Right.
So if a producer didn't act quickly to either buy those contracts back from the grain merchandiser, whoever was on the other side, or cover futures to cover his track, I mean, he's now $3 out of the money on a big position. And I think that's a driving force right now. A lot of people are frozen and just can't pull the trigger to take the losses in those contracts. So we're getting a lot of short covering coming in here. Open interest has not been going up, which tells you there's not any new buying coming into this market. So, you know, it's a concern. But, you know, at the same stage, you know, I don't think we have a top in these markets yet. And it's but I don't think we're real far from it. I think this will be a year we'll have a top in before the 4th of July weekend. But we'll probably have to have a blow-off here like lumber's doing before we really get to that point. So it's going to be a wild ride.
One thing that we haven't talked about yet, Rick, is ethanol's role and what's happened in corn, biodiesel, renewable diesel's role, and what's happened in the soy complex. Make some comments on that.
Well, I'm a little concerned that what's going on in the oilseed market right now is the same thing that has happened several years ago when we started the ethanol industry. You know, we had all these arguments, food for fuel, and, you know, a lot of people got all bent out of shape and raised all kinds of heck that, you know, we're raising food prices. And I think in the short term it did. But in the long term, of course, it's all worked out. But now we've got this movement, particularly in the West Coast, for renewable diesel. And they're using a lot of vegetable oils to make diesel for their requirements now in the state of California. And it's catching on in some other states as well. So we're seeing a lot of the soybean oil and other oil seeds going into renewable diesel. And that has really driven this market very, very strongly. And I would anticipate that we're going to see some arguments from the general public fairly soon, if it hasn't already started and I just missed it, that, you know, we're driving up food prices for the benefit of renewable diesel and other energy products. Yeah. So I think it's a concern, but right now it's been the driving force in this market until today. For the first time, we saw soybean meal lead the march to the upside rather than soybean oil. They both were higher.
Yeah.
The soybean meal actually really took off today. So, you know, and again, that just shows me that you know, this market hasn't topped yet. For us right now, I mean, I'm having a hard time even coming up with an objective. If the congestion area we broke out of from last week is halfway up from the last major support area, it would take November soybeans to $15, and it would take December corn to $6.80. Both of those are within reach this week, but it is one good soaking rain away from a major correction, and that's what I would be concerned about.
All right. I want to talk a little bit more about that, because you mentioned and gave us a preview of your thoughts on the supply and demand report. I want to get back to that a little bit, because those tight supplies that everybody expects to see for the 2021-22 marketing year, how much of a float does that provide for the corn and soybean markets going forward? Talking with Rick Brock, Brock & Associates. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. The Wall Street Journal asks, where did all the workers go? Millions of Americans are unemployed. Why can't companies find workers? South Carolina becomes the second state to pull out of the expanded jobless benefits. China soybean imports up 11% from a year ago during April. China expects bigger corn, wheat, rice, and rapeseed production in 2021. French wheat ratings still sliding after that April cold snap. U.S. and China ramp up war of words on trade, human rights, and even on a stray rocket. House watch the skies over the weekends, everybody. House Democrats seek step-up basis tax hit carve-out for family farms, and Vilsack adds to those pushing for huge conservation program funding increase. Give it a try at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. We don't make the news, we render it. AgriTalk.
A pair of boots and a sack of clothes.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory, having a conversation today with Rick Brock from Brock & Associates, the Brock Report. Before we get back to that, let's recap how the markets closed. July HRW wheat was a dime higher at 736 and three quarters. July SRW jumped 8.5 cents to 761 and three quarters. July corn futures, 13.5 cents higher, 732 and a quarter. Dease corn closed at 636 and a half, up 11 cents on the day. Wow. 636 and a half, new crop futures. July soybean futures, 20 and a quarter cents higher at 1589 and three quarters. November bean futures closed at 1433 and a half, up 24 and a half cents on the day. We had December cotton futures, 17 points higher, 86.89. June live cattle futures, 55 cents higher at 116.02 and a half. We had August feeder cattle futures up 87 and a half cents at 144.27, and June lean hogs a buck 62 and a half cents lower at 112.85. Rick Brock, the Brock Report is with us today. I don't want to miss a couple of things. I don't want to miss an opportunity to talk about. First off, let's talk about what happened in this livestock market this week, Rick, because one day June lean hogs closed at a premium to June cattle. One day they closed at exactly the same price. We've got the cattle back to a premium to the hogs, but this is just what a fascinating experience, I guess.
Well, it's really crazy. And, of course, if you take a look at the other market, feeder cattle futures, they just do the opposite of whatever corn does. I mean, corn is up, feeder cattle futures are going to be down. They've had a tremendous decline in the last 2 weeks. But, you know, the demand for the meat is still pretty good. I think the thing that concerns us more in the pork is that to date, our shipments of pork to China are down 27%, I believe the number is. And then on top of that, though, our bookings to China for the rest of the year are down 62%. So the demand there is starting to decline quite a bit. In 2018 through 20, 50% of the hog herd was lost. in China. They're now rebuilding that back. That was 20% of the world production. That's coming back. So that's helping our demand for corn and soybean meal going to China, but it's going to cut into our meat exports to China once they get back on steam, and that trend is already starting to show. And I think a lot of that was in this market, but the bottom line, I mean, cutout values, while we're a little bit softer this week, have overall been quite good. And we've caught up from all of the shortfalls and slaughter that we went through a year ago when we had backlogs because slaughter plants were closed down. So fortunately, that industry is pretty much back to normal now. And with people having a lot of money to spend, retail demand for meat is just incredibly strong.
Yeah, it certainly is. We still got a little work to do to clean up the situation in cattle, though, don't we?
Yeah, we do. It's not as positive as the pork market has been, but I think it's still good. I don't, we're not negative the cattle market at these price levels. We think there's more upside potential than there is downside risk, and we don't have huge burdensome supplies, but we certainly could use a little bit less than what we've got. But it's I think it's demand-driven bull market right now. Or demand-driven market, and I think, as I said before, there's more potential on the upside than there is downside.
Okay.
And then, the other markets I think that we really have to watch is people say, well, what's going to put a top in these grain markets or the livestock markets? I think what we need, what will happen is there will be an event. I'm very concerned about our relationship with China right now. It doesn't appear to me as though they get along with this administration any better than they got along with Trump. I think they probably got along better with Trump. I'm not sure what they will try. But we need each other, and that's what's keeping this relationship going right now. We need some of their products. Chip, we buy 50 to 60% of our agricultural chemicals from China.
Yeah.
So we need them. And then what we don't buy from them, we're buying from India. And India has got massive problems right now. This recent outbreak of COVID-19 and the new strain in India, it's very, very serious situation in India. So a lot of plants have shut down. So we're going to see even more shortages of a lot of the products that we buy coming from India. And, I just hope somebody doesn't drop a bomb someplace, which would be in the event that would stop world trade. And I think we've gone far enough into this administration, they're in there long enough that, the odds of that happening are pretty slim of any kind of battle in the Middle East.
Yep.
I'm hoping we're past that. But, this at some point, if we get a week of a lot of rain and into the really dry areas, that'll probably be the event that turns this market around and then starts some farmer selling. Right now, we're just not getting farmer selling at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. At the start of the show, we talked about the weekly changes in the grains and November beans on the week up 93¾ cents. That's 7%. And it sounds incredible until you get to December corn, which was up 72¾, which was 12.9%, Rick. The corn soybean price ratio right now, 2.25 to 1. It's almost like beans are saying, listen, if there's any opportunity to move some acres around, just go ahead and take it, corn.
That's true. But at this stage, I think those decisions have all been made. I mean, here we are. We're May the 7th. I don't think price changes now are going to change any acreage. We had a lot of our customers 2 weeks ago in the southern states put their cotton planters away and started planting corn in land that had been planned for cotton. I think we're going to see some fairly significant increases in corn acres in states like Mississippi and Louisiana that would have traditionally gone into cotton. I think we're going to see total acres on corn and beans combined probably 3 million more than what the USDA forecasts in their planting intentions report. And a big part of that's going to be in corn. But that big of an increase in beans isn't going to help the bean market. I mean, we still are way too tight And I don't think we can produce ourselves out of this tightness in 1 year. And right. So then what will the market will be looking at, where in the world can more acres come in? Brazil. And I'm not talking rainforest. There's a lot of tillable land in Brazil that hasn't been planted. And I think we'll see a lot of some sharp increases in planted acreage of both soybeans and corn in Brazil over the next 12 months.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're right on that. What is the risk going into Wednesday's report? And what I mean by that is, could USDA decide, listen, we need to do some damage to the usage estimates for 2021-22 for both corn and soybeans, and we end up with carryovers on the new crop a little higher than what the trade might be expecting?
Yeah, I don't think they would do something like that. But when you talk about carryovers, one thing I would point out, if you use the USDA's forecasted planting intentions report along with a trend line yield, as long as we get any rain at all, I mean, our carryover is still going to be, we think, above 1.5 billion for next year, and probably closer to 1.6. And so what we're looking at is a squeeze here on the old crop because farmers aren't selling. And let's not forget that with the current stocks to usage ratio on new crop, if we do plant 92.5 million acres, it only justifies an average cash price of around $5 a bushel, slightly less. And here we are with December futures at 630. And so you've got a market that we think is a dollar a bushel overpriced if we have a normal growing season. Now, everybody can argue that. I mean, and people say, well, we're not normal yet, and they're right. But, you know, I think we have to look at it. We are not trading cheap corn relative to the acreage we're planting right now. Beans, another story. But corn, I think we've got to be real careful. And, you know, I would want to take a banker's perspective on this and saying, you know, when in doubt at these kind of price levels, why don't you sell 5%? You do some incremental sales in here, because when this thing turns, it's not going to leave any survivors. We're going to come in some morning, corn's going to be down 10, beans down 30, and it's not going to look back. I don't think we're there yet, but I don't think we're as far away from it as some people are anticipating.
Yeah. We talk about how trending markets, when they put in a top or a bottom, that it's a process. But I feel like that's more true when we're putting in a bottom, Rick. In a market like this, when we're putting in a top, yeah, there might be a bit of a process. In other words, a quick break, go back up, test that high one last time, but then just kind of fall out of bed. It feels like it could happen quick this time.
I think so. I think we'll, and I, like I said, I think we'll be have it before the 4th of July weekend.
Yeah, and I wrote that down.
And it just scares me. It just scares me that any market that goes up this fast comes down even faster. I mean, it's not a question here of what's going to happen. It's a question of when it's going to happen. And, you know, you just can't go on a two-week fishing trip in this kind of a market. You know, I mean, you could come back those would be very expensive fish. And so, you know, this is a time, unfortunately, I think everybody has to be glued to their seats. And, you know, and look for the opportunities and do what you're comfortable with. You know, in these kind of erratic markets, I would agree with most farmers. I would probably not be using much in the futures market right now because I wouldn't want the risk of margin calls. So you make small cash sales in this kind of a market.
Yep.
And conserve your cash because you got to do what helps your emotions in this type of environment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Man, another great conversation, Rick. Thank you, man. I appreciate you.
All right, Chip, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again soon. That's Rick Brock, The Brock Report, Brock & Associates. When we come back, I'll wrap things up, take a look at the weather forecast.
The best talkers in ag, including you. Join the conversation on AgriTalk. Call us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
You know, I realized during the break that Rick Brock and I just had a conversation that would normally happen like the middle of July, okay? Because of the one comment in particular, we're one good rain away from breaking this market down. That's amazing. We're already in a weather market. some of the thought process that Rick just took us through, I think is pretty important, and it's important to realize where we normally would be in this conversation. What time of the year? What time of the growing season? We would normally have that conversation, because that's why you need to anticipate a July type reaction to a rain rather than a May type reaction to a rain. It's May 7th. And Rick Brock just said we're one rain away from breaking this market down. You got to change how you're looking at things. Can't go fishing. Can't go fishing for 2 weeks, because if you come home, those could be pretty expensive fish. I love that. That's pretty telling of what this market is doing. And then, you know, I had to write that down, that he expects the high to be in the markets by the 4th of July. The timing of these moves are going to feel foreign to everybody. If Rick is right, the timing of this market is going to feel foreign. And that's why you've got to have that plan in place that will allow you to react to market activity when it is time to react, rather than just saying, you know what, I know that we're breaking this corn market down, but doggone it, I want to wait for pollination in the third week of July before I do anything. You might have to do something before that if Rick is right. So this is, it's time for an adjustment in the way that we're thinking. I've talked about this in the past. I wrote about it in the market education series that I wrote for Pro Farmer and for Farm Journal. But there is a strategy that I like in this type of market. And some of you out there already know what I'm going to talk about. And it's that trap strategy. It's a trap strategy. So what you've done is you've drawn horizontal lines on the chart at different levels of resistance based on history of where the markets have gone in the past. Now, as the market crosses those lines of resistance, you increase the amount that you are willing to sell if the market falls back and closes under that resistance level. So let's say that we're starting out at $5 in Dease corn. That first close above $5, you think, okay, that's awesome. If the market falls back and closes below $5, I'm going to sell 10%. Okay, fair enough. Now the next level on there is $5.25. At that level, you should be willing to sell more than what you were on a close below $5. So at $5.25, a close below would increase the amount that you're willing to sell by 20%. So let's say that the market just continues to march forward, closes above 525. You set the trap then to sell 30% on that first close below 525. Next level, 575. You got to increase the amount that you're willing to sell again. So it's 30% now. So the first close back under 575 is a 60% sale. We've used that strategy before at Pro Farmer, to the point that when we made the sale, it was like 80%. 80% of what we were willing to sell at that time of the year. And it works. It works. Couple of words of warning on a trap strategy. I know how everybody loves to sell the high. Loves to sell the high. With this strategy, you will never sell the high, because you're going to make that market fall back and close below that old resistance level that should now be support. Okay? So you'll never sell the high. And the risk in it is that the other thing is, I like the strategy now because of basis. Basis is giving us a good opportunity, not only on the old crop, which is off the charts, but on new crop. It's given us an opportunity on new crop that we can go ahead and, like Rick said, let's manage this risk with cash sales rather than futures or options. You can do that with this strategy because basis is offering a good enough opportunity. So you make your forward contract cash sales for fall delivery on as you're doing this, but the The risk on it all is that you get a limit down in futures and a breakdown in basis on the same day. Doesn't happen that often, but it can happen. The other thing is, what if it goes limit, limit, limit? You know, something like that on the way down. I don't think that's going to happen, but obviously, comments like I just made are made to be proven wrong later. Hopefully they won't be, but look into it. I like the trap strategy. The other thing is, by increasing the amount that you are willing to sell at each resistance level, that 10%, now let's add 20% to get to 30%. Now let's add 30% to get to 60%. By increasing the amount that you are willing to sell at those resistance levels, you prevent yourself from getting more bullish as prices go up. You prevent yourself from getting more bullish as prices go up. And that is one of the keys in managing risk in a market like this. There's no question about it. You gotta be aggressive with it. National Weather Service 6 to 10 day outlook, May 13th through the 17th. It's got below normal temperatures in the eastern belt, normal to above normal temperatures in the western belt. We've got above normal precipitation expected over a lot of the corn belt. Northern Indiana, most of Illinois, Missouri, Iowa, eastern Kansas, eastern Nebraska, eastern South Dakota, all of North Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin. So we've got some chances for some above normal rain. And then when we jump out to the 8 to 14 day, and this is for May 15th through the 21st, we've got above normal rains expected across the entire Corn Belt. Temperatures are going to warm up for us, but above normal rains. And you just heard Rick Brock say what he said. One good rain and we could turn this thing around. For Tyne Morgan and for producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, thanks for listening today. Monday morning, John Doggett, Machinery Pete. And Monday afternoon, Brian Hoops, Midwest Market Solutions. Have a great weekend, everybody.